Blog Talk Radio. My goodness, bring on the love. Bring on the love. Welcome, people, to She's Raising the Bar Blog Talk Radio. Happy to have everybody with us serving Blog Talk Radio for the past 8 years, and now we are bi-coastal. So saying hello to my West Coast people at 10 o'clock there, and my East Coast base, my posse here. It's 1 o'clock and it's the afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us. And we are just so happy to be here. What to say? Where do I begin? Okay, I'll begin at last week. Last week, I was sitting in front of the mic and having a wonderful show. And we usually start the show, anybody who's been following us, at least for the past 5 years, knows this guest has been on with us every first show after the new year, and that's Tammy Lee Webb, who is in a lot of people's opinion fitness royalty, Buns of Steel franchise, Abs of Steel, one of the brown breaking people in the fitness industry, just a lovely person. And we usually have her on to start the new year off in a healthy fashion. And that's where we were last week at this time, chatting about New Year's fitness resolutions, why they don't work, why they do work, what you have to do to keep them in check throughout the year. That's what we were doing. Lovely conversation. She's off the air, and I'm doing my sponsor roll call, as I usually do the last half of the show. And my phone is buzzing, and I'm looking at it, and you can't really do anything because you're on the air. And I was saying to myself, okay, my husband's home and he's safe, so I know it's nothing that's an emergency. And I'm thinking most of my friends know my schedule and they know not to disturb me on Wednesdays between 1 and about 2:30. So no calls should be coming in. So get off the air, sign off, and go upstairs and put on the TV and just see the world unfolding in a very different way. And I realized everybody that was texting me was, I had a few people in Canada and had a couple of people in the UK wondering what was going on here because they had been watching TV. And I hadn't been for that hour and a half. That kind of changed everything for people. And that's what it was. And it's not funny, but this is where I've been for the past, I guess, 7 days. You know, I've been in front of the TV watching this world change under our noses. And it's, you know, anybody who's listening to the show knows what side of the fence I lean towards. I'm very left-leaning in politics. But, you know, after signing off my show last week, saying one of my favorite quotes from Mother Teresa, which I'm sure I'm gonna start off with today. I always leave the show saying, if we have no peace, it's because we haven't realized that we belong to each other. And I always sign the show off with that. And you know, I was kidding around on the air that I don't want to gloat, because last week we knew that we had Georgia and we knew that that vote was important. And I wanted to make sure, because, you know, I don't think gloating is cool. I was certainly happy, but I wanted to make sure that I got my feelings out on the airwaves before our next guest came on, because I don't, you know, Tammy Lee is a wonderful lady, and she always says, I'd rather not, you know, stick my toe into the political pool. So I never engage her in that. And it's just so funny. It just went from zero to chaos in an hour's time. So this is where we are this week. And I think, as with everybody else, you're just watching and hoping for the best and, you know, bracing for the worst. And I think that's kind of what we all are doing. And again, it has nothing to do with policy. It has nothing to do with who you voted for. It's just a matter of when you recognize chaos as chaos, call it out so it doesn't happen again. And in my time voting, oh, I have to say I've always stayed with my party line, but I'm always trying to look at somebody else's point of view. But you know what? This just does not make sense, because I've been somebody who's disagreed in policy with a lot of people. And I go on board as saying there might be a time where the new administration does something that annoys me. Okay, that's okay. I expect that, because you don't get everybody in one package. You don't. That's not what it's about. Somebody's going to disappoint you. Somebody's not going to, you know, own up to what a feature that you find near and dear to your heart, and that's fine. But last week was something that I don't think anybody to see. And if anybody went to their TV and was cheering for this, God help you, because you're cheering something that we should really be afraid of. So regardless of who you voted for, last week was not the best week for America. That I'm just going to say, it really wasn't us at our finest. And we've had lows before, but this is a new low for us. But today, another controversial topic is going to happen. And my next guest is a wonderful author. And I read the book, and I was hoping I was going to have time to read it again. Alexis Hunter, who wrote A Body to Die For, and it's a Joy Lansing story. And on so many levels, this hit me. And I just think this is a topic for discussion, and it's really a timeless topic. And I'm gonna bring her on, and I'm gonna tell you why I think it's timeless. And she's on board now, and let me just bring her on with me so I could segue nicely. Alexis, you there, darling?
I certainly am. How are you?
How are you holding up, honey? How are you holding up on all this?
I'm okay. I'm okay. I mean,
yeah.
Every day is, you know, it's like, oh my God, if it isn't one thing, it's another. It's just very.
That's why I wanted to start off the show. Saying last week at this time, having a nice lively discussion about fitness resolutions and getting in shape for the new year and da 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 da. It turns on a dime, you know?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, the pandemic, the trauma and drama that's happening in this world, it's just, it would be nice to be able to exhale and just have some peace.
Just when you say thought it was safe to go outside, you know, it's just, you know, It's just mind blowing. But this is what I want to discuss with you, because I think this is going to be a lovely segue to our discussion today, which has many layers to it. I had found an article in the New York Times. I think it was the New York Times. I don't want to misspeak, but I'm pretty sure it was the New York Times. And it was about Serena Williams. And it was about how Ian Tyriac, who is the director of the Madrid Open. He's a billionaire. He's 81, and he's a tennis player from way, way, way back. Now, according to my research, he wasn't really that great. You know, I know his name only because he's on the board.
Sure.
But he went on to say that Serena Williams, who is, I think, an amazing athlete, you know, I'm not even going to put her in a category of female. She's an amazing athlete. He actually went on, I think it was in Romania, he went on public TV and said he was hoping that she would resign and decide to retire based on her weight and her age.
That is.
And I said to myself, after cursing out loud, and my husband ran in, after cursing out loud, I said to myself, now, let's look at this. Nobody said that about Derek Jeter of the New York Yankees. Anybody's on the West Coast and not familiar with the name. Mm-hmm. And nobody said that about Tom Brady, both of whom are in their advancing 40s. And no, any the praise that they were met with because they are this age and still able to, you know, go hand to hand in the game. But women were asked to leave based on, well, she had a kid and this and that, and she's not moving
she's
the same way she
chunky,
was 18
yeah.
years ago. And this is what I'm saying. Nobody, and I have to be honest with you, both of the male athletes that I mentioned, yeah, they look very different than they did 15 years ago. Absolutely very different. And they're moving very different. So mm-hmm. to call her out and ask her to respectfully retire because she's not going to have the ticket draw that she normally would 15 years ago, I thought was cowardice. I said, here it is, sexism, ageism, racism, all rolled into one. And then I realized, go ahead, finish your thought.
It's so depressing the way women are treated, women, mm-hmm. especially as they get older. And that, you know, that was part of the substance of my book. That was
mm-hmm.
one of the motivating forces for Joy doing the things that she did. She always,
mm-hmm.
she wanted to work. And she was getting older. She was getting older it's just rampant. It's really sad. We need to change this. People need to think of women equally,
mm-hmm.
not judge them because of their weight, if they're pretty enough anymore,
mm-hmm.
or,
mm-hmm.
You know, because if you lose that ticket, you know, you're a goner.
Yeah.
You're a goner in this business. It's really sad.
It's crazy. And the funny thing was, as life usually does it to you, I was starting to think after reading your book and just thinking about things in general, and things are moving in a direction that we want it to. That stopped me in my tracks because I realized then, now, any woman that, anytime there's a woman that's in front of a camera, whatever her role is, it could be a TV announcer, it could be a mom, whatever, anytime a woman is in front of the camera, she's going to be under scrutiny. It's never going to stop unless, I hate to sound morbid, but unless that old antiquated mindset actually physically dies out and we don't pass the baton to a younger generation of, you know, narrow-minded men, this is always going to happen. And I just think, and to speak to your book, and I advise everybody to get it. It's just wonderful reading. I have to say I applaud you for writing it because it had to be so hard. It had to be cathartic, I think, on one end, but it had to dredge up a lot of stuff for you.
It did. It was difficult. It was very difficult to write. But it, as you said, it was cathartic. I was able to let go all the tapes that were running in my head all the time. Because I didn't want to let go of any moment that I had with her. I just kept thinking about it, living, reliving every moment. I mean, it was just like, it was constant. And as soon as I finished writing the book, I could exhale. I could.
Really?
You know, because it was there permanently. It's always going to be there. You know, it's not going to disappear.
Yeah.
So, you know, I said what I had to say, and I just want people to remember her and to love her and to know her struggles. And, you know, she was an amazing, wonderful woman. And,
seems it.
And she needs to be remembered. And that was my purpose, honey.
And, you know, when I was creating the sizzle reels for this book, I said to myself, because this book can read like a Hollywood's who's who, because there's, honestly, in my age group, I'm 58. Everybody that I, all the names that I remember being part of quote unquote Hollywood were in this book. And I said, you know something, I'm not gonna lure an audience in because of that. There's texture of this book that needs to be said. That's an aside. It's a great book if you want to hear about Frank Sinatra, Tony Fields. It's a great book if you want to get into all that personally on three levels. It hit me as a feminist. It hit me as a supporter of gay rights. But it also hit me as someone who was in the health field for 30 years. And this is why I think it's probably the most important book that people should pick up, because as you turn the pages, it leads you deeper. It leads you deeper. And before you know it, there's a tragic end, of course. I'm not being a spoiler here, but you go away with, you know, a layer of yourself that you could see in that book.
Well, it means so much to me that that my book touched you, that it was able to convey certain things to you that that kept things, you know, that'll keep her memory alive and hopefully stop women. We'll touch on it probably later, but the things that she did to try and stay young and to be vibrant and to work and to just to be that, because she was a sex symbol and she had it was so important for her to be the most beautiful, the most sexy, the most alluring, to be able to work. I mean, that was her persona. That was and that's how she identified. And to lose that, when I met her, she was 39. And she was so afraid of not being able to work, to losing her career, to no longer being desirable. I mean, because she was one of the most desirable women in Hollywood at that time. She was magnificent. And the thought of losing that just was so destructive to her.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of my favorite movies is North by Northwest, and Cary Grant is in it, and I'm bringing this up for a point. Cary Grant, I believe, was in his mid-40s when he made that movie, and he was still able to get somebody who was in the movie anyway. Jill St. John was probably about easily 15 years younger than him, but Cary Grant always worked because Hollywood was always permissive. It's always, a man ages, a woman ages poorly. So the shelf life for Hollywood actors are very, look at Sean Connery. He was always considered a sex symbol, but the shelf life for an actress, specifically a bombshell, what is it, maybe 10 years?
Oh, sure. If she happened to be lucky. Yeah. If she could maintain her looks, you know, I mean, and now women with the plastic surgery, the Botox, the Restylane, and sometimes awful stuff. Just trying to preserve what they had, you know, which gave them that moment of glory, and then to be so afraid of losing it is just very sad. And as you said, men can keep on going, and they're always cast with a woman 10, 15, 20, 25 years younger, and that works. It's still fine, you know. It's okay for them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a different mindset.
And, you know, what I came away from with this book is, you know, Hollywood will inject you chemically, but they also inject you with the mindset of you're only as worthy as your appearance. And that is the worst thing to tell the woman that is, you know, your product. But it's the worst thing to tell the masses of women that are going to a movie and wanting to look like you, and they just can't.
Yeah.
It's such a disturbing message.
Yeah, it's so destructive to women in general. They can't be all that all the time. And and even little girls are being taught, mm-hmm. we've got to be pretty. Little boys, mm-hmm. you know, are told, oh, you're wonderful, you're smart, you're this. And little girls, what a pretty little girl. Oh, you're so
mm-hmm.
pretty. You know, and it's just, mm-hmm. they start with the crap, you know.
Yeah.
And if the girl doesn't feel pretty or, it's so sad. It's just, I mean, things have to change. And I think the younger people are a lot hipper and they see through the crap. A lot of them, you know, I have a lot of faith in the young people.
I do.
They're
me too.
Open-minded and the stuff that my generation was the propaganda we were given, you know, I hope it just dies out because it's a bunch of crap. It really is.
It is.
And it's not fair. It's not fair to women and it's not fair to men.
No, exactly.
It's awful. It's awful.
We had a show on, I think it's about 5 years ago, where I had a supermodel roundtable with all the supermodels that were big in the 90s and the 80s. And they came on and I said, speak as much as you want about the industry. Don't do anything to harm yourself because if they're still working, I don't want to get in the way of that. But I started the show with, and in the East Coast, I don't know if it was something that translated west or anyplace else. We had a show called Little Miss America, and it started in 1968. Yep, exactly. And it was, they had the auditions in Atlantic City in Jersey. And every week, parents would show up with their little girls by the thousands. And I said to myself, what were they thinking? They never had a little Mr. America. They had a little Miss America. And I always thought, you know what? A little girl should not know how to be sexy. A little girl should be a little girl and discover who she is, whatever she is, whoever she is.
Right.
And
right.
they were taught to saunter, and they were taught the backbiting that is involved with, you know, creative cattiness, that I'm only as good as I look. And I thought to myself, geez, how damaging was that? And how damaging
so
is it? Yeah, to the little girl who's looking up their parents and they're not as pretty as this little girl standing next to her. I just, oh, my God. And thankfully, I thought that stopped until a reality show that I'm sure you've seen. It was about little girls in fashion shows. I'm trying to think of, I can't think of the name now, but
yeah,
there were these
remember.
Little girls walking around in high heels. You're talking about 8-year-olds walking around in high heels and sauntering
God.
And the hand on their hips. And I'm thinking, where were the social workers on this set? Where?
Yeah, that's crazy. That's just crazy.
It is crazy. And this is again.
What a message. What a message it sends out.
This is what we permit. And, you know, like I said, I was so reasonably happy that I'm thinking, yeah, you know what, things are better than they were when, you know, all the texture of your book, things have got to be better. And then I saw that article about Serena. I was like, you know what, it's a little better. We're not where we should be.
Yeah. Yeah, it is improving a little. But there's still an undercurrent.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and it
I
has
mean,
to be hard for you. Go ahead. Continue what you're saying. Go ahead.
Oh no. It's definitely improving, but the undercurrent is still there. You know, and the obsession with the Botox, and you can't have a wrinkle. Oh my God. And I mean, I'm going through that right now. Oh my God!
Mm-hmm.
You know, wrinkles are showing, and I said, "Oh crap! Here we go." It's just our culture, and hopefully the it'll die out, and people will. With the pandemic, people aren't going and getting their hair done as much. they're starting to look like they really look, and it's scary. At least you're not, I avoid the mirror at all costs.
Oh,
right
no.
It's not a pretty thing, but oh well. You know,
but
it's just like, you know, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I'm not, look, if there's a feature, I'm not against plastic surgery. But if you're going
Me
about
either.
For the wrong way, if there's a feature that plagued you all your life and you said, you know something,
sure.
I really want to change my nose, God bless you. If it makes you feel better about you.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
To feel that you have to is an entirely different game. Entirely
sure.
different.
Sure, sure. Oh, sure. No, I mean, I'm not adverse to plastic surgery.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just don't see it in my future right at the moment. it's a little pricey.
It is.
But,
whatever,
you know. I could get a, you know, what is it, a GoFundMe page? I desperately need plastic surgery to feel good about myself.
Stop it. You're beautiful. What are you talking about?
I'm teasing, Lori.
But
that's the culture. That's the culture.
Well, see, that's exactly it. Women are taught that you have to learn, you know, you have to be, you know, don't forget, it wasn't that long ago that women were, you know, you don't need to go to college education, you need to go to graduate school, you're going to get married. So it's still the same mindset that has to die out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
It,
mm-hmm. It's got to die quickly. It's not dying quickly enough. Yeah, but I hope that, you know, when people read the book, hopefully they will get that message that I'm trying to get out, you know, that we don't have, you know, look what it did to her. Look what it did to her, such a wonderful person. You know, it killed her, you know, and that's why the title of the book, The Body to Die For.
The Body to Die
For. You know, she died to have that body, and it's just, It's very sad, you know, but.
And that's the thing. Even if you know, again, I remember my father-in-law, who's, you know, a man of his generation, he's 91 now, he always would mention Judy Garland. Hollywood ruined that girl. He always mentioned her that way in his Brooklynese. And, you know, he even got, you know, the uppers, the downers, the dieting, this crazy lifestyle. Uh-huh. And, you know, even if you had the genetics that kept you thin, they wanted more of a bust. They wanted more of you know, a rounding of the hips. So you were at Hollywood's disposal. And that's what's crazy. Even if you were, quote, unquote, thin, it wasn't enough. You have to have something else. You had to have something else enhanced.
Mm-hmm. You were never enough. That's the major problem. And that was the message. You were never enough. You had to keep trying. You had to do everything possible to be prettier, sexier. You had to have, pardon the expression, bigger boobs. And now that's one of the things that's making me crazy. Now they're doing the silicone in people's butts, you know, because they're in my generation and after, it was, you had to have great big boobs. Now it's big butts, and they're getting the silicone injections in their butts, and it's going to kill, and it is killing, and damaging people forever, and that's my soapbox right there. Just got to stop that crap.
Yeah, we have to, and the whole thing is, how do we do that? You know, again, as we get more women in Hollywood and more women that have the rights to create their own productions, we're able to think a little bit more towards unity and. Not everybody's a size zero, and not everybody's this, not everybody's 5 foot, you know, 11 and a model.
Right.
But we don't have that yet. See, that's the thing. We have to change the, and this is what I always think, we have to change the mindset of the little boys growing up. We can talk to our little talk to your sons about how women should look, how women should be respected, how women should be appreciated for their minds and their talents, and and that's it. That's what we have to do.
Yeah, and that is one thing that I think is a hopeful thing. I think that young boys are being taught to treat women differently, not the way they were. Yeah, and I'm very hopeful. I'm very, very hopeful that it'll stick. You know, and things won't change. And advertising. You know, that's a major issue. You know, the way that women are advertised. There's always, you know, sex sells. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the common line. You know, sex sells. So mm-hmm. that, you know, there's always a good-looking woman and a sexy woman in a commercial mm-hmm. or an ad. And you know, I think through your show and through your words, I think you're able to help change this, and I'm really happy about that.
Thank
you. I was so excited to be on your show.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's you know, every little bit helps. You know, I mean, you know, any time that you know, we get different type of mail, and it's fine. And men saying, "Well, you're man bashing." No, we certainly aren't. You know, because the women's movement was on the shoulders of the progressive men that walked alongside of us.
Absolutely.
So we need each other. We need each other, and that's the only way the world changes. We have to create an environment where men don't feel threatened, and treat us as equals. Nothing better. Treat us as equals.
Exactly. And the only thing that is frightening, I mean, have you seen The Handmaid's Tale?
Oh, my goodness, sweetheart.
Well, what's happening right now is what's scaring me, because it seems like it's coming to fruition. You know, that's got to stop for sure. Definitely got to stop.
And you think the book was written in the 80s, I think it was. I might be misspeaking, or the 90s. That book was not written now. And, you know, again, this administration is on its way out. So women's rights aren't up for grabs as it was 4 years ago.
Right.
So,
oh my God, yes.
Praise God for that. Praise God for that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we still have a lot of mentality out there that is just divisive and just, by a woman who's as talented
strong.
And educated as you. Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to
strong women. Yeah.
No. And my thing is, why? You know, when you're threatened by somebody, it's usually a deficiency in yourself. It's usually something that somebody's hitting a trigger. So it's never that person's about you. So men need to really look deep and say, well, why am I threatened by that? You know, she's just doing this. She's doing. It's not a problem. It's not taking anything from me.
Right. Secure men don't have a problem with strong women.
No, absolutely not.
Secure
absolutely
men
not.
Appreciate an intelligent woman, a woman of substance, a woman who isn't just flash, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
And we need more men like that. You know, and hopefully they'll be raised to be like that.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. We have to, you know, I hate to sound like this, but the dinosaurs have to die out, and the new men have to come forward, and the new women have to come forward to speak their. That's it. So it's both parties, both genders coming forward and saying, you know what? This is me, and we don't eclipse each other. We could both have the same power in the world, and that's what we need to say.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And
now, one thing. Go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead,
one thing that that blows my mind. People that love the book the most are men, straight men.
Is that right?
It's amazing to me. I was afraid that they might not like it or whatever, but they appreciate it, and they love Joy, but they appreciated the love that I had for Joy.
Mm.
And and I've had some of the most tender, kind notes from men, straight men that, you know, that were just so loving and so appreciative of the book. And I'm so grateful for them for that. You know, it really touched me. It touched me.
Yeah. And it had to be so hard for you. And I'm trying, as I was reading the book, I'm trying to picture myself in my 20s saying goodbye to somebody. And again, when you're in your 20s, you know, God forbid, if you say goodbye to a parent, you kind of expect that.
Sure.
But to say goodbye to the love of your life when you're in your, that's, oh my God, that's an undertaking that had to be, oh my God, I can't even imagine. I honestly can't imagine how you dealt with that.
It was brutal, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, after she died, I really don't remember the first few years after she died. I was like,
wow.
It was like a blur. It was like surreal.
Really?
I mean, I was totally lost. But, you know, but it also, the only thing that, good thing is, one of the good things is it made me very strong. So I can deal with just about anything. I can deal with just about anything at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, watching someone die is probably everyone out there knows this at some point, or will know it at some point.
Yeah.
And it's, especially now with the pandemic, you have to tough up and, you have to be strong for them. So
yeah, exactly. But again, you know, in your 20s, you know, we don't really come into ourselves until we're in our 30s, I think. And again, it might have been a different generation. You know, people got married at 20, and I understand all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still tough losing a partner that young.
Yes.
Yeah, it can't be. And especially, you guys lived the life. You guys were up on the town on Broadway. You had a wonderful life, which is great.
Oh my God!
Absolutely
life.
Great.
Yeah, I had.
And to
that
stunted,
I mean, here I am, this kid from Kansas.
Oh my God!
But, I mean, my God, here I am with this amazing woman, and. Here I am in New York. I love New York, by the way.
My God.
I gotta come back. I mean, we lived on Fifth Avenue. We lived.
Oh my goodness.
We lived right next to the Sherry Neville in the Park Five.
Okay.
Jacqueline Suzanne lived there at the time. It was really cool.
She did. Yeah.
Really, really neat people in the elevator. And here I am, just like aghast and just like, oh my God, oh my God. You know, it was just really cool. And going to New York, going to Vegas, it was wonderful. I mean, you know, and it's kind of been downhill, you know, but I did have all those wonderful experiences and it taught me so many things. Taught me what's really important. The main thing, the main take from this is, it taught me what's important in life.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen.
Love. Loving people. Letting them know that you love them. Because you never know. You never know when you might lose them.
Exactly.
And so appreciate people. Appreciate kindness. Appreciate love. You know, always be kind. Always let people have their dignity. Always. That's the main takeaway.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. You were in a throbbing community of fame, and you know, you ran into people, and I'm not going to mention names because that's not what the show is about. I'm not trying to get ratings. It was about the essence of being vibrant and alive in a society that, you know, was slowly shutting you down, you know, as far as being someone being, quote, quote, a blonde bombshell.
Right.
And right. That's what we're talking about.
Mhm. Yeah. I mean, she was watching her career fade. She was also very bright and very enterprising. Mm-hmm. And when she knew that, you know, the blonde bombshell roles were disappearing. You know, that was mm-hmm. when things were starting to die off. And she did mostly television. Mm-hmm. She was the blonde bombshell of television. She was on mm-hmm. just about every show, because at that, I mean, the young people now can't possibly fathom that at this time there were only 3 channels on television.
Oh my God!
You know?
No.
Yeah, ABC, NBC, and CBS. That was it.
That's right.
Yeah, either you liked one or the other, and you'd go back and forth. But you had to stand up mm-hmm. and change the channel, of course. And there were no clickers. Clickers did not exist, and so you had to get your butt up and change the channel. But Joy was on every show. She was on TV all the time. She did over 100 shows, and mm-hmm. She was really well known, more for television mm-hmm. Than she did do films, but TV was her thing, and mm-hmm. and she knew that, you know, as she was aging, it was kind of you know, diminishing. So she was a wonderful singer. She was a really good singer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And she knew, and she developed her own nightclub act. And she sang mm-hmm. she sang all over the country and she went to other countries and sang. And mm-hmm. she had great reviews. People initially went there just to see her. And I thought, she probably isn't very much. But that they loved her, because she was good. I mean, she really, she could sing.
Had a nice voice. Yeah, she could.
Yeah. And when we were in New York, she was talking to a record producer, and she was going to have her first album. And then that's when she started to get sick. So that kind of ended that. But she was enterprising. She was enterprising. But she was still freaked out about the looks, and she was, you know, she was afraid that, even though she could sing, if she didn't have the pizzazz, you know, the great looks, who would want to come and see her? You know, like, she was so insecure that she would not leave the house unless she looked perfect.
Oh.
Would not go out.
Poor dear.
She was. Yeah, it was just, and it was just all the crap that, you know, the Hollywood propaganda. You know, you have to be this, you have to be that, or you're worthless.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. That's what I wanted to ask you. Before she got ill, did she mm-hmm. have a plan to say, well, okay, you know what, when I'm in my 50s, I'm going to do this? Did she have any alternate that, you know what, I'm going to invest my money and I'm going to do this, or I'm going to go back to cut, whatever? Did she have any backup plan? Really?
No, she really didn't. No, she didn't.
Wow.
She was so wrapped up into that persona, you know, the blonde bombshell. That was her, that was her identity. And, I mean, in the book I talk about which she went to a doctor that she knew in her 30s and said, I can't get old. You know, what can I do? I can't age or I won't work. What can I do? And this monster gave her an open-ended prescription for Premarin.
Yeah.
For estrogen. And her body was producing more than enough estrogen. She was a young woman. And she just kept taking it and taking it. And I know that that was a main contributor to her death. And so there was that terrible fear, of growing old.
You know, I'm a huge Twilight Zone fan, and one of my favorite directors is Ida Lupino. And she was wonderful. And there's an episode on the Twilight Zone that Rod Serling, a progressive man, not her direct. I think she directed three of the episodes there, but it's called The 30 Millimeter Shrine, which is about an aging actress. Now, if you if you look into how old she was when she made that episode, Ida Lupino was 43. And yet she, she knew it was important enough because that's probably how she was feeling. She wasn't the glamorous woman who was in front of the camera, but then again, she was behind the camera for a lot of years after that.
Right.
But that's
right.
That Hollywood stamp that, okay, the clock is ticking and you're looking over your shoulder and how many years do I have left?
Right.
I think that's every woman in Hollywood. Every woman.
Right. A lot of them, that's why they segue into directing or writing, not being so much in front of the camera or production. But more and more wonderful actresses are forming their own production companies. And because there haven't been great roles for women past 40, but now they're producing their own films so that they giving themselves their own jobs, which is great.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
love seeing this because women, in their 40s, their 50s, whatever, still have something great to offer.
Oh, yeah.
They just need to know that. They need to know that and they need to be appreciated for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone. I mean, women and men. Just because you're past that wonderful prime when you were fabulous, you're still fabulous, but you have a little wisdom hopefully with it, and you've grown.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I had the producer of Grey is the New Blonde on 2 years ago when she made this film, Victoria Marie, who is out by you and on the West Coast. And it's how women are not permitted to go gray, but men are. They're called silver foxes, Cary Grants, George Clooney, anybody, Sean Connery, I mentioned him before. But women cannot do that. Women continue to die, and the chemicals that are, absorbed by the scalp, we're learning these are cancer-producing features. And yet, we continue to do it because we don't want to look old. And this is just a cycle that's got to stop.
Yeah. I mean, in other cultures, older people are revered.
Exactly.
Dumb.
Can you imagine that? Yes.
I mean, how nice is that? I mean, to be appreciated as you get older and thought of as something of value, not something to be discarded. Here, the minute you hit a certain age, they want you to disappear, and it's really sad. This whole culture needs to be changed.
It needs a facelift. This whole culture needs a facelift. Exactly.
It does, and it's all on the young people. They have to. They have to do it. I think that I have faith in them. I really have faith in them.
I do.
One thing I don't know if I told you, is my book was in the curriculum of one of the local high schools.
I love that.
Is that the best? In the International Baccalaureate program, the best of the best students, the sharpest, and it was all for seniors. So they were you know, mature enough to understand my book and what was so great is I would talk to the kids. They would bring me in to talk to the kids. And I loved it. They had to do an essay on my book. They had two books that they had to read, and mine was one. And they would do an essay, and I would read all their essays. And then I would write to them, and I would comment. You know, I'd write probably as much back to them as they wrote to me. And then I would go to their class, and they would ask, could ask me anything. There are no restrictions. And the kids were great. They were great. They would ask wonderful, deep, you know, profound questions about relationships and the culture. And they had difficulty understanding how difficult it was for gay people during that time frame, and it blew their minds, you know, when I would explain things to them. You know, at that point in society, I mean, this is the time of Stonewall, and it was the time when, you know, if you went into, there were a few gay bars, you know, and if I went in there, and I was talking to a woman, and I put my hand on her shoulder. I'm not talking sexual. I'm talking, well, holding her hand. They could come in and arrest you.
Absolutely. And they did. Absolutely.
Yeah, there was no touch. You were not allowed to touch in any respect. And police would commonly come in and just rouse the place. Put pressure, and if there was a pretty girl, a lot of times they would take, you know, arrest her, and you know, and there was always, well, you know, you don't have to go to jail if, you know, that stuff. So, Jesus, you know, Christ. Things have changed, and these kids, the kids were just like, wow, they couldn't believe how things were, but things have changed. Things are improving. There's still a lot of hatred, but there's more acceptance too, and it was just so great to be in front of those classes to talk to these kids.
Oh my God, it's refreshing, and it's
wonderful.
Inspiring because the future is going to be a bit better because of you.
Yeah.
Because of you having this dialogue with these kids. And again, I always say to myself, the slackers might not be, you know, as economy driven as we are, but you know what? They're going to be about humankind, and they're going to be about acceptance, and all lifestyles matter. And I think that's probably that's all we need. That's all we need.
Sure. And yeah, I am so grateful for that experience. And I wish I could. I would love to talk to more kids. I would love to do that. I would love to do that. It's just, you know, I'm putting the word out right now. If you have a class, if you're a teacher out there, and I would love to talk to your kids. You know, they need to understand and realize that, you know, we're all on this boat together.
Exactly.
We're all the same. It's just a difference of who we love, you know. So I love this person, and you love that person, as long as we love someone, you know.
That's right. That's exactly
have
right.
Have compassion. Compassion's the big deal.
You know, and again, now it's a hard time to do anything, but virtual, you could do that virtually now. And,
going into classrooms
would be very different. So we'll think about that, but that's another a good option. You know, an aside to this, we'll talk about gay clubs. I had my office for, 20 years. I was on East 57th Street. And right off Lexington Avenue, and I was in the penthouse. I had gutted out the penthouse, and my office was there. And I remember I was in an article in New York Magazine, and somebody had contacted me and said, "Was that Madame Spivey's nightclub?" And I was like, "Madame Spivey, who is that?" And they said, "And you know what?" And I said, "Well, I'm here 20 years. I know what I'm talking about. Of course, she wasn't here."
Yeah.
So John says to me, "Why don't you look it up?" And sure enough, Madam Spivey was this, she had this gay nightclub was and how cool it was. Carol Channing was there. Tallulah Bankhead was there. Madam Spivey would play piano, and then you had Liberace, who wasn't known, playing piano. You had two baby grands going at the same time.
Oh,
and this
God.
Would go, and I always thought to myself, nothing cool happens on the East Side, let alone, you know, not in an underground going on for 10 years. And I was saying, how freaking cool was that? But again, it was one elevator going up there, and everybody had to know you, and you got in, you know, by a knock on the door, so to speak.
Oh, my God, like a speakeasy. I love it.
That's exactly right. And she'd be there till 3 o'clock in the morning. Her girlfriends would be there with her, and everybody who was everybody on Broadway was there. And I just thought, my God, that's reason for me to renew my lease. That's the reason I should stay here.
Oh, my God, yes. I love it.
It's cool stuff. It was.
Oh,
and
my God, the vibe had to be fabulous. Yeah.
Oh, my God. And I remember going out and looking, saying, okay, the baby grand was probably here. The other baby grand was probably here. And it was just the coolest thing. But this is how you have to operate back in the day. There wasn't a gay nightclub in 1949, 1950. No, there wasn't.
No, because that was totally illegal. My God. That was part of the deal when I was with Joy. It was still illegal and not cool. And if anyone had found out about Joy and I, our relationship, that would have totally destroyed her career. And so that's why I had to be Joy's sister.
Sister.
It worked.
Yeah.
It worked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people believed it. So that was good. And we stayed to ourselves most of the time. We weren't out and about. We didn't go to parties or any of that stuff because, you know, there was always someone that was going to hit on someone, it wouldn't have worked, and we were, Joy wasn't into all that stuff, she really wasn't, which is great.
And you know, as I'm reading the book, I'm thinking, well, how could you not be yourself? It was the 60s, you couldn't be, so you didn't know
it,
but it's not like now going out, and you could go from club to club, you just couldn't do it then, you just couldn't.
No, there's no way, absolutely no way you could. I mean, you had to be, you had to play the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, you know, Joy was so funny. She just thought it was hilarious that she had a girlfriend. She didn't understand how dangerous it was. She really didn't. So, I mean, like we were, there was a great club in Beverly Hills called Your Little Club. I don't know if you know LA at all, but it was a great club. Yeah, it was great. And big performers would go there and work on their acts. I'm blanking out. But we went there a few times, and she just insisted on holding my hand. I got nervous because I understood the danger, but she didn't.
Yeah.
She really didn't. Joan Rivers. Okay, yeah. One time we went to see Joan Rivers, and of course Joan introduced Joy and all that. Just wanted to hold my hand in the nightclub, and it was just like, oh my God, I was so afraid. I was the one who was the adult in the room. Just when I was so afraid for her. I always kept it, you know, the old expression on the down low. You know, I didn't want to hurt her because of me.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yeah.
That would have killed me if I had hurt her. So people believed that we were just really close sisters. that was good. And people bought it because we were both blonde, same color eyes.
Mm-hmm, exactly. You know, but I'm looking at it from her point of view, And, you know, after a couple of drinks, sometimes you say enough is enough. You know, I love this person. Who cares? Let it
You're
go.
Right.
I don't care.
Right.
So it's, you know, look, it's a very tough time to have been in then, you know, and now it's better. But, you know, again, we still have patches around the country where it's not, you know, applauded. It might not be as smeared, but it's not as applauded as it might be in New York or the West Coast.
Sure.
You know, so,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of places, you know, I don't want to go.
Oh,
I would
no.
not be accepted. No. Yeah. No.
Look, I got to
No.
There's places I wouldn't want to drive through. That's just, I'm not going to name them now, but there's no, unless I was in a Sherman tank, there's some places
sure.
I would not want to drive through. But that's
oh.
just the way it is. You know,
exactly.
I always say, I kind of live in a bubble being, you know, in New York because more or less you're kind of like-minded in the West Coast the same way. But,
sure.
you know, there are different parts of this country where, you know, you realize you're speaking a very different dialect than a lot of people as far as human rights. And,
uh-huh.
you know, that's unfortunately probably always going to be the way it is. So.
Yeah, yeah, it's a totally different mindset. And yeah, as you said, I don't know if it's ever going to change, but I just stay away.
Yeah, exactly.
Careful avoidance. Yeah.
But that's you know, you mentioned something in the book. You made a comment in the book that I loved because I read The Celluloid Closet. I still have to read the Vinyl Closet, but, you know, I read all these books on Hollywood and, you know, same-sex unions and so on and so forth, and
right.
all the people that were known in their circle and they were accepted in their circle, but somehow the press left them alone. I mean, a perfect example is Paul Lynde. He definitely was gay most of his life, and
sure.
nobody ever picked at him. You know, Johnny Mathis, he's still with us. There are certain
sure.
people that people don't, the press doesn't pick on for whatever reason that is.
Yeah,
but it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For some reason, people just and I don't know why that is. But quite, you know, quite frankly, I don't care why it is because leave the person alone. They have their rights over their own life.
Sure. Absolutely.
And there was a comment that you made, and it made perfect sense to me afterwards, that Hollywood almost would condone same-sex liaisons because it kept their investment sound.
Yes.
And I was thinking,
yes.
wait, what the hell is that? Oh, of course. No, there's no pregnancies. Again, the investment
right.
is always the blonde bombshell or Sophia Loren or whoever it was.
Sure.
And I thought to myself,
yeah.
wow, that made perfect sense.
Oh, my God, yes. Because, I mean, how much money was invested in the beautiful little female stars? And abortion
mm-hmm.
was illegal at that time.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
a pregnancy, I mean, sure,
mm-hmm.
there were illegal abortions, but they didn't want to, if it had leaked out or whatever that somebody was pregnant,
yeah.
my God, it would have destroyed their careers. And, you
yeah.
know, and heaven forbid, the woman might want to keep the baby. You know, it's
I
all
know,
the money
I
that
know.
They, all the machine, that the machine had put into that
mm-hmm.
woman, developing her career. So, you know, a lot of times they'd look the other way and kind of sometimes they encouraged it, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Just don't
mm-hmm.
get pregnant. Just don't get
mm-hmm.
pregnant. And, you know, because homosexuality has been around forever.
Of course.
And there's a lot of stars that were bisexual or homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
And it was just like, you know, people just kind of just accepted it or ignored it
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. or it just never was discussed. It was one of those that were just,
mm-hmm.
you just, oh, we won't talk about that. We're not going to
mm-hmm.
talk about that, you know,
yeah.
and, or
yeah.
they have a beard, you know, which
yes.
means
mm-hmm.
a lot of people know
mm-hmm.
what that means, but
yep.
in case you don't, it means that you have
mm-hmm.
someone you date or
mm.
you're married to, and it's just a marriage of convenience or dating,
convenience,
you know,
yeah.
just, so people would think that you're straight, that, you know, you're
mm-hmm.
Normal, as they say. And, I mean, tons of, I mean, there was so many people. It's just amazing. And it's the way it is, and it still is that way. Yeah, but hopefully people will be accepted for who they are, and they don't have to play this stupid game.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as I'm reading this, I'm thinking about the gossip columnists then in the 50s. You had Hedda Hopper. Uh-huh. Who else did you have then? I'm trying to think. How they did not zero in on anything was either sympathetic or just they just didn't get it.
I think they were obtuse.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, a lot of people mm-hmm. don't, you know, especially if someone's very feminine, like Joy.
Mm-hmm.
They would. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Joy was straight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't
mm-hmm.
get that out
right.
there. Joy was straight all of her life.
Mm-hmm.
She dated. She was married 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
She dated
mm-hmm.
lots and lots of big, you know, powerful men. She dated Sinatra, all those
mm-hmm.
guys. And
mm-hmm.
she was straight. It just happened. Just
yeah.
happened with us. You know, we connected
mm-hmm.
on a different level. And
mm-hmm.
I came into her life at a time where she needed a woman,
mm-hmm.
the female energy, you know, the nurturing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And it worked for her. And it was wonderful for me, obviously.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But she was a straight woman. And I mean, who's to know? I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
just like,
yeah.
you never know.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen. And, I just got derailed on this one. I just lost my train.
Get back on the tracks, girl.
Okay, girl, I will do it. But, you know, it's just like, you're so funny. You know, it's just the way it was. Sexuality, as they say now, is fluid. I mean, it can be whatever.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And people are more accepting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And not so rigid.
Mm-hmm. You know, I always think in terms of, and I always think a little further than maybe I should at times. But who is half of things? Now, can you imagine? God willing, she lived. If you were
mm-hmm.
in a 40-year relationship, you know, do you think that you would have gone out in public as being married, now that we you know, obviously we have marriage equality. Do you think
mm-hmm.
you two would have gone that route?
Knowing Joy, we kept to ourselves. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But I think she would have been more open to doing it, really. As long as her career wasn't affected,
mm-hmm.
well, at 40, if we were in a relationship for 40 years,
mm-hmm.
her career would have probably totally died out pretty much because of the, you know, her image. But I think that she would have come out as, you know, being in a relationship with me. She would have, I think so.
Good, good. Good. Because, you know, again, you know, it's very hard to say where, I mean, your time with her was frozen in time and a specific mindset. But
right.
now, I mean, as years go by and as you advance together, you realize you can navigate a little bit differently and things are a little bit more acceptable now. And
mm-hmm.
that's the beauty of it. That's, you know, that's why I was saying, like, would you have, you know, And that's a sad thing. It's usually one person or one couple or one situation that is the guinea pig, and then everybody, the door is open, everybody kind of slips in after that.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think she would have been open. I mean, if she wanted to hold hands with a little pup.
Yeah,
I
was going to say, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Oh, sure. She would have been, in, you know, whatever. You know. She would have. Yeah, she would have. She was feisty. She was very feisty.
Mm-hmm.
She she had a wonderful mind of her own, which is really great. She was not easily swayed. She was very unbelievably bright. You would have loved her, Lauren. You would have loved her.
I think I would have. I know. If I love you, I would have loved her, of course.
She was so sweet. I mean, I swear to God, she never said anything evil about anybody. Aww. She was not catty. She wasn't, she was an angel. She was a little angel, a wonderful woman. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The birdie. Yeah. The birdie. Yeah.
The birdie, yes, the birdie dance. I love that part. I'm just picturing.
You should have said I'm doing the birdie dance.
The birdie dance. I love it. And I loved your parakeet. You know, I'm reading a book, and I'm jealous, because I'll tell you why I'm jealous. I have a parakeet that I rescued, and I have two lovebirds, all of whom I can't get them on my finger. I can't get them on my finger. I want to hug them. I have them for like, oh my God, they're about 13 now. But if you don't get a bird and you know that, you put it in the book, that's hand raised. That's it. That's
sure.
it.
Sure.
So I'm reading that he was kissing her lips and he's sitting on, I was like, where the hell do I get that? Why don't I have that?
Because you need to get a new birdie. You need to get in a different cage, with the others.
No, the lovebirds are in a flight cage, and my parakeet, Popcorn, but I can't. You know, if you get a bird older, if you rescue them, there's no way you could, that's what I'm saying. So I'm reading that book, I'm saying, damn it to hell. She's doing this with the bird is doing that, and I'm glaring at mine. I'm glaring at mine, saying, how dare you? You got a good home.
Oh my God. You have bird envy.
I do have bird envy. But that's thought it was so cute. I thought it was so cute, that little bird that loved her so much.
Oh, that bird, I swear to God, they were connected. They were soulmates, I swear to God. Mr. Pooper was in love with her. He was in love with her. He would sit on her chest and look at her. And people don't understand how intelligent these little guys are. He would make up his own sentences. It wasn't just repetition. He would say, I love you, Joy baby. I love you. I love you. I love you. And he would give her kisses. You know, are you getting more envious?
I gotta go up and get a drink now.
Of course you do.
Oh my god, that's so cute, honey.
You've gotta get another bird. Please.
I know.
I'll help you. I'll help you. I'll have to come to New York
and train my bird too, because
I'll
this
help
is not
you.
Working
yeah.
for me.
Oh my God! Yeah. Oh, there's nothing like having the parakeet. I love. I have to get another parakeet. Yeah. I love them. And they are so sweet. And this little guy, they were so connected. It was just amazing.
That's beautiful.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah. Oh God, he was wonderful. Great little bird.
And parakeets are very, very smart. If you take the time and you get them, you know, at the right age that you could, you know, take care of them, hold them, and so on and so forth, then you have a wonderful pet for many, many, many years.
Oh, my God, yes. And they're so much fun. Especially for people who are, like, housebound or whatever, what a great animal. What a great, great gift they are. They're so full of love. They really are fabulous. Yeah. Oh my God. Hey, you got to get a new one.
Lori,
I'm going with you. We're going to the store.
Got to go and pick it out with me because.
I'll go with you.
I love them, and again, they are afforded the best of everything. They're advanced in years, but it would be nice. And I have three cats. who all are great with them. They look at the cage. They don't distract them. They don't, you know, make threats in any way.
Right,
but I put
right.
my hand in the cage and have millet, and they still fly away. And it's just like, okay, this is the way it's going to be. And that's fine. That's fine. They're safe. They're with me. I'll take care of them. And that's it.
Sure.
But the next bird will be a hand-raised, either dove or whatever. And it'll be a little different.
Oh, my God. Oh, you will have so much fun. It's just
delightful. I was babysitting for a friend of mine, had a dove who was having seizures, and her and husband were going to be going away. And I just enjoyed, I would be walking around the house with this big dove. And my husband would say, put that thing away. You're going to traumatize it. You're picking it up too much. And I was just, every place I went, this dove was in my hands.
I love it. I had a dove once. I called her Isadora Dove. Like Isadora Duncan. Yeah.
It's a Duncan. I love that. Yeah.
Isadora Dove. Yeah. Yeah. She was great. You know, beautiful. Oh, birds are great. You know, they're
just they are
great.
And they're easier. You know, if you have to go away, you can leave some food for them and a water drip. And they're okay.
Yeah. Or people don't mind babysitting a bird, you know, so
they
much.
They don't.
It's no big deal. You know, you don't have to clean up everything. You know, it's not such a big production. You know, a little bird poop's no big deal. You know?
Yeah, that's nothing. Change the cage before you leave, and they're good for a week.
Exactly.
That's fine.
It's perfect. Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah, so, I'll come to New York. we're going
please,
shopping,
just for that. Just, I'll pay for your airfare. You gotta go bird hunting with me. You gotta go.
We'll go. Yeah, I love it, Lori. Yeah. Oh my God.
Okay, so before you go, my love, and you'll be on the show again, is there anything that we touched on that you want to shout out? All the information for the book is going to be on my page tomorrow. But is there anything else that you wanted to mention before you leave?
Ah, gosh. You know, I hope people will read the book. I would love that. It would mean a lot to me. And I love to actually connect with the people who are reading the book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they have any questions, I'm happy to answer. I'm totally open. There's nothing, there's nothing that I won't talk about. One thing I'd like to get out there is,
sure.
I want this to be a film so badly. I want this. Mm-hmm. I want more people to know about Joy. So if anybody's out there listening, please read the book and check it out.
I agree. I could see who was going to play who. I could see, but I'll tell you that offline. But
we'll
I can see who's going to play who. We'll talk
fabulous.
About it.
I love it. When we're going bird shopping.
That's exactly right. We'll do it all in one day. That'll be perfect.
Perfect. It'll work. You're an angel,
you
Lori.
So
you're
thank
an angel.
You, darling.
I love
and you'll,
it.
You'll be on again. Thank you so much for
I
coming
would
on.
Love to be on again. It would be great. You're
you
such a delight.
You still will. And everything will be on my page tomorrow. The book is available on Amazon, and all that information will be on there. But it is a must read. It really is. And it's a very easy read. You jump in, and it's absolutely fine. You connect with every character, which is the most important thing. Alexis, thank you so much for joining us. I love you, sweetheart.
I love you, too. Thanks, Lori.
Stay safe, and we'll talk soon. Alexis Hunter.
I love it.
There you go. Author of A Body to Die For, and I got to be honest with you, this for me as a feminist, it's just there's nothing more important than talking about how Hollywood, how the media injects, rejects, disrespects, objects to women aging, and I think that we need to formulate a game plan so that this doesn't happen to our daughters. It doesn't happen to our sons who are married to women who might seem, who might get caught up in the turmoil of this. So That's what I'm talking about. And I think that we need to do that now, and it's never too late. So, Alexis Hunter, thank you so much for joining us. And I want to give a shout out to my sister, Pamela Silvestri, who does The Dish every Wednesday at 9 o'clock. She's on Staten Island Advance platform, and she does a wonderful, 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 wonderful show. The restaurants are taking a beating, and we really need to go to a restaurant and outdoor dining, and don't mind that. Get out, support your restaurants, because, you know, my main business is in Manhattan, and it kills me to walk down Broadway and see all the restaurants that have been shuttered, needless to say, the shows. So I think that what we need to do is try to frequent whatever we can, even if everybody went once a month. I think that's a wonderful thing, and it might not do everything, but it'll do something. So that's our show today. And in case I didn't introduce myself, I'm Laurie Towers. I'm your humble host, and next week we're going to be going into rerun. I'm going to be glued in front of the TV, but we will be back on the air the following Wednesday, and I urge you to take care of yourself, take care of each other, and again, my favorite Mother Teresa quote is, if we have no peace, it's because we've forgotten that we belong to each other. Keep that in mind as you navigate through life and the next week. It's important. Stay on the side of peace. Stay on the side of unity. And I wish everybody a wonderful day. Take us home, Nina. Thank you, Nina Simone. Thank you for joining us.